Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
So anyway, I was hoping that I would be able to present to you the final crystallized version of exactly what is going to happen this Friday for Canada Day celebrations based on the findings or the report of the Canada Day subcommittee on Friday. Unfortunately, as you heard, still some things left in the air. Is this on?
So the details are still being worked out.
It's been a bit of a process.
Next Friday, I think we'll all be, I'm sure, surprised at something. Where we are right now is remarkable.
Now maybe we could get into some of the details.
We'll have some more clarity later on. More details to come.
And as participants, it's flexibility and patience. Sometimes our expectations are very scripted.
We'll have to paddle. We're not just going to float across.
So. Just as a warning, it may be that our group is divided into more than one canoe.
We'll take our lead from the nations.
Okay, and more details to come.
There's more meetings that need to take place. The opening ceremonies, we definitely need to still have some more discussions.
Councillor also says some of these things will unfold as they do in the moment.
And I think that's pretty much where we're going to leave it. Fingers crossed, hoping for the best. A Victoria Council return to Canada Day celebrations at Ship Point post-COVID-19. Municipal elections this fall, as I'm sure you are no doubt aware. Two of the individuals who are on the Canada Day subcommittee, of those two, one will overwhelmingly likely to be mayor. Whether it's Stephen Andrew or Marianne Alto, undecided at this time, it'll be up to the electorate. Ben Isett might be running, he might not be running. He says he hasn't ruled it out yet, but he hasn't said that he is running yet. We're at the point now where it's been left so long that even if he does signal his intention to run, it looks like he was unsure, and that might make it difficult for him to recruit more supporters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll be watching that very carefully. I think he also has that book launch event that was postponed. I think that's occurring this week, unless they've postponed it again. I was watching that carefully because I thought it might be a campaign-style opportunity. I think that's tomorrow night, so I'll be watching that. I want to bring in Mario Canseco with Research Co. They've been polling people across British Columbia in terms of the civic issues that are emerging that will be top of mind for voters this municipal election cycle. Morning, Mario. How you doing?
Morning, Adam. Great to be here with you.
We're trying to hammer out our Canada Day celebrations that we hope will be amazing as of this Friday. Still some uncertainty, though. Uncertainty in terms of the minds of the electorate as well. What are we seeing?
Well, there's definitely a higher rate of concern from residents of British Columbia with housing, homelessness, and poverty. This is similar to what we saw in 2017, 2018. When the pandemic happened, we had more people who expressed concerns about COVID-19 and healthcare. But now, in a way, we're back to the same issue landscape that we had before COVID-19 hit Canada, with people expressing a higher level of concern about housing. And it's also something that is moving away from the urban areas. In the early stages, when we started to see housing climb the charts, it was mostly a Metro Vancouver to a lesser extent Fraser Valley thing. Now, every single region of the province, the island, southern British Columbia, northern British Columbia, and, of course, the lower mainland, all of them believe that this is the number one issue facing the province.
What can municipal councils do about it, though? Because that would be the assumption if it was top of mind for voters, or is it?
Well, what we see here is essentially a scenario where the public is getting desperate with how long it takes to get things done. And we see a high level of support from residents to essentially doing things at a quicker pace. We've all been exposed, regardless of where we live, to endless discussions and endless amendments and, you know, the sessions that go on forever, trying to get something built. And it's definitely taking a toll in the residents who are expecting something to happen with housing, particularly those aged 18 to 34, when they see their councillors having to sit after speaker who is going to talk about how the shadows of a building are going to affect their petunias. You know, it's not the type of situation that they want to see when there's a housing crisis going on. And I think this is why we have the high level of support for specific issues that the councils could deal with, regardless of who gets elected later this year.
We mentioned that 39% of British Columbians rate housing, homelessness, and poverty as their number one concern. That's more than double the closest second place issue. But I'm noticing that second place issue is health care. Again, not really much of a municipal issue, or is it?
No, it's not really a municipal issue. I think what we see here is a level of concern, particularly from the older generation. If you're over 55, you're more likely to be looking at health care as an issue that is of concern. A part of it is COVID-19, but it's also because of the ramifications of the end of the pandemic. We've seen those discussions about all the surgeries that have been postponed and the actual viability of the system in the future. this is the kind of issue that the two levels of government sort of wrestle with. BC government, regardless of who's in power, saying we need more money from the federal government. The federal government saying deal with what we're doing because we're funding it, but we're not going to talk about how you should be running your show. This has been essentially the same situation that we've seen in the federal debates of 2019 and 2021. But it's not something that is lost on people who are worried about what happens in their municipality if healthcare continues to drop.
Now, I know that you were doing this survey in conjunction and in partnership with the Nonprofit Housing Association. So specific policy prescriptions that might help nonprofit housing providers and builders were part of your survey. I have to ask you, though, like I'm reading here, 77% support contributing public land to nonprofit co-op housing, support waiving development cost charges, 67%. Do you think people know what a cost charge is?
I think they know, partly because we've been talking about this for so long.
Yeah.
Especially in a city like Vancouver, where we've seen that the red tape coming out of City Hall has been very, very problematic.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of those reasons where we see the level of change in the way we're looking at municipal elections. I think over the past 20 years, people are paying more attention to this. They're more likely to be tuning in into what happens. I remember the election of 2002 where you could barely hear stories about municipal elections. So I think what is happening is the public is growing more concerned about the fact that if they sit out these elections, a lot of things that they want to see in their municipality are not going to happen. We continue to see a lower voter turnout in municipal elections when we compare it to BC elections or federal elections. And that is something that has to change because these are the people who are going to define what our municipality looks like. You know, we're not going to vote on other things. But if we continue to have in places like Langley City a 25% voter turnout, then you're not going to be representing the wishes of the community.
Housing, homelessness, and poverty emerging as top issues for voters heading into BC civic elections this fall. Surely that is true here in Victoria, true in other cities as well. Our guest, Mario Canseco, president of Research Co. Mario, thanks so much for your time as always. Any final thoughts?
Well, we'll see what happens. I think we are bound to have debates where the discussions about how to deal with housing are going to be significant, particularly when we compare it to the elections of the past. And what we see here from the public is the idea that we should be doing things simpler if we want to get people into homes, not complicate them more with red tape.
All right. Mario Canseco, thanks for your time. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Adam.
All right. Bye now. All right, folks, we're going to open up our phone lines now. 250-386-1161, *1070, a free call on your wireless device. Your chance to weigh in on these and other issues that we've discussed on the program. I've also got a pile of text messages I'm going to read to you here. So we've got the beginning. There was Pride over the weekend, massive numbers downtown. We've got, of course, an unfortunate incident with assault still taking place in the downtown core. And again, anyone who saw anything or was a victim of that man who seems to have serially assaulted a number of women in rapid succession with police present in the 1100 block of Douglas Street. That's right near Fort, for those of you who are curious about the block number and might not know it offhand, as well as plans for now. Canada Day, I hope, goes off amazingly well. But the reason that I played that for you today is because they have those meetings in public for a reason. It allows us to judge the process. And now we have the context in terms of where they were 7 days to showtime. You know what? If they pull out an amazing showstopper on Friday, it'll be even more impressive because you'll know that a lot of those details came together at the last minute. If they don't, you'll have context as to what could be done better next time and why those challenges may have contributed for that. They can still hit it out of the park. There's no reason they can't. It's my job, though, to tell you what preparation has and has not been done as of certain dates. And that was as of 7 days to showtime on the 24th day of June. Quick break. Back after this.
Keeping you informed, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
All right, phone lines are open, 250-386-1161, *1070, a free call on your wireless device. I've got a bunch of texts I want to get to first. Adam, a texter, wrote to me earlier in the program, did you see that Lisa Helps was quoted in the Times Colonist talking about the museum, saying that a good leader admits their mistakes? Texter writes, I spit out my coffee laughing. Yeah, I did see that, and yeah, I did sort of, you know, scoff to myself, as I often do. Texter at 1070-10, Mike in Victoria, writes, I hope the president of the Downtown Business Associate, what, like Jeff Bray, has resigned. Why would he do that? For supporting the new museum, or a new museum, while saying we don't need any more tourists because it's hard to get reservations at restaurants. I would have to actually look at that particular situation? Mike, I don't know the particulars there about who sits on the museum board of directors and who doesn't. I wouldn't expect, though, the DVBA to come out against this, because generally their role, with the exception, and I want to congratulate them for their courage for speaking clearly about recognizing the public safety crisis in downtown Victoria. Vic PD needed more resources to get a handle on that, and they are, bit by bit. They're working on it. What happened with that guy that committed the, is alleged to, I should say, have committed the series of random assaults downtown on the weekend? There was a Vic PD officer nearby that stopped him, is what happened. If there hadn't been that officer, I fully expect that there would have been more victims and that more women would have been targeted, until somebody with a badge finally took this guy into custody and stopped him from hurting more people. So I'm glad that those officers were out there at that time. Texter 107010 writes to me, Adam, last week we went to the Navy Museum on the base by donation. It was excellent. I didn't know about it, texter writes, until recently. Highly recommend people go see it. Another texter at 107010 writes, oh, and this is about the surveillance camera issue. Morning, Adam. Just curious, texter writes, isn't it Vic PD that decides to put out security cameras? Like during the Freedom Parades, I recall seeing notices about Vic PD about surveillance. Did they have to seek approval from council first? No, they did not. And if they did, council probably would have told them no. It's complicated, but what I'm talking about is the city of Victoria has specific policies with respect to the use of CCTV footage, specifically information retention, that the city has been advised is in conflict or in tension with the ability to have a modern CCTV system that records footage that could be relied upon in terms of authorities trying to figure out who committed a crime and whatnot. It's a deliberate policy choice, and it's one that I believe has put the public at significant risk. Just one more reason. When Lisa Helps is gone, all of us will be better off, in my view. There is nothing that has been contributed to this city that, on balance, will be positive. Is everything bad? No. But the bad far, 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 far outweighs the good in terms of permanent harm that people have suffered, in terms of the reputational damage to our city, and quite frankly, to the damage of public trust in terms of our municipal government. It is difficult for me to overstate just how much damage a handful of people have managed to do to my home and the thousands of people who live here over the past few years. In terms of Vic PD and those notices, that's just Privacy Act stuff. There's not normally a camera there. People would not expect to be aware of a camera there. It's public property, not private property, in terms of whether it's legislature grounds. So they issue that notice. So you know that if you don't want to be on camera, you probably shouldn't go there. With Victoria, they could easily put CCTV cameras up in Centennial Square. Our understanding is that as of September of 2020, I should say, September 4th was the date on the draft report we had. There were no CCTV cameras in Centennial Square. And the attack that happened, that I talk about quite a bit, happened, I think it was August 26th or 27th. So it was before that, which is what I'm relying upon for my opinions. All right. Now, another texter writes, can't they figure out the protocol and send an email rather than waste time having another coffee chat? Well, they're going to be at City Hall anyway on Thursday, so they're just going to touch base. Somebody else says, paddling is not that hard, a texter writes. I'm fully confident there will be a guide to get people across, says Sarah. Oh, yeah, and I'm sure there will be as well. Somebody else says, OMG, Adam, I'm literally laughing with tears streaming down my face. What could go wrong? This is Radio Gold. Love your montages. I would pay good money to watch a reality TV series where Helps and Alto and Andrew and Dubo get stranded somewhere and have to like find a car and then take turns driving it to get from point A to point B, and seeing how that particular road trip. I'm sorry. We've all seen them at the table. Can you imagine them arguing over where to stop for food and stuff like that? Right. You're picturing it right now, aren't you? Good stuff. Morning, Adam. Where's ice in this scenario? A texter writes, let me guess, he can't swim. I don't even know what that means. I don't believe he's involved in the Canada Day subcommittee. In fact, he said that he felt it would be silly season, if memory serves, in the original council deliberations on this matter, and said that he did not want to be on the committee. Although I would argue that everybody on the committee has been remarkably professional. Like, you've got Stephen Andrew and Marion Alto there. They're both polite. They're both professional. And yet when he gets added to the mix, everybody else seems to also get weird, don't they? No, the Canada Day subcommittee has been actually very professional. The only issue is that I don't think they had enough time to put this together as, completely as they would have preferred to. So this is getting put together at the last minute, but the committee itself, like, I've monitored their meetings, and it's usually pretty professional. All right, let's dive in. I've got Richard and Kevin on the board, and I'm not wild about either choice. So, Richard, we'll start with you.
Hey, Adam. Happy new week to you.
Yep.
Before I get to my main point, I was thinking maybe I could call in once a week. You know how Ron calls in with updates from Hollywood and so on.
Nope, I'm saying no right now.
I could call.
I don't even care. I don't even want to hear what you're proposing. No.
Well, okay. Then part of my topic today was just to mention that our friends on the political hard left, the progressive, they have their hysteria of the week, right? They have their hysteria of the week this week. It's that Supreme Court ruling in the U.S., which I won't go into, but every week there's a
You mean Roe v. Wade being overturned?
Yeah.
You're calling that hysteria of the week?
Every week there's a new hysteria.
And you think this is just inconsequential and it'll be something else a week from now. Really?
And exactly.
Richard,
exactly.
I have problems believing even you think that.
Yeah. So I sent you something that Les Lane had written the other day.
Oh, did you?
And what it does is he mentions how, yes, reconciliation has been and remains the main point that the NDP has been using to try and ram through that museum for $1 billion. When I mentioned that the other day, you completely dismissed me. The same as...
Well, maybe it's because you say things like Roe v. Wade getting overturned is a hysteria of the week. You know, that's not a serious comment, Richard. Nobody thinks that's serious.
Are you kidding?
No.
They're going crazy. They're going crazy.
Do you? But because 50 years of Supreme Court precedent regarding privacy that was then relied upon by a number of other cases. Yeah, it's complicated. I know. The 14th Amendment wasn't ratified until 1868, and it had implicit rights that weren't actually written in the Constitution. In this case, the implicit right to privacy, which was extended to essentially shield a number of other rights, which are now potentially in question because of this particular ruling. I understand it very well. If you think it's just a thing of the week, I don't think you understand what's actually happened.
Something you don't seem to understand.
Mm-hmm.
I won't even give an opinion about abortion. The United States is a republic. Each state is much closer to a country unto itself than our provinces are.
Yeah, you know what? And it almost tore itself in two between 1861 and 1865 with the United States Civil War. The founding fathers of Canada, having watched the United States rip itself in two for 4 years, 2 years later in 1867, a Confederation decided to have the residual power rest with Ottawa because of that. We are the solution to the mistake that was the U.S. Civil War.
Yeah. No, that's Justin Trudeau gets to dictate to British Columbia and to Alberta, okay? So I happen to think that the Republic is a much better idea. Why did we let Quebec have so much
of Because time? Of the Civil War. That's why. Canada literally was formed the way that it was 2 years after the American Civil War because everybody looked at what had happened with the North and the South trying to kill each other and went, wow, that's a bad mistake. We're going to make sure our country can't do that. That's literally why.
Hysteria of the week. Anyways,
what do you mean hysteria of the week? We're 150.
Hysteria of the week, and there will be a new one next week. Whether it's climate change or atmospheric rivers or the heat dome or the earthquake that we've never, ever, ever had.
I can't believe you think the earthquake is hysteria.
Or all 12 white supremacists in Canada are going to come and eat your children.
What does that even mean?
It's a new hysteria every week. I also sent you a link to John Horgan the other day, three times, not during his initial statement, but during the question period, stating that his big error regarding the museum was not that he tried to go ahead with it. It was that he didn't quite grasp British Columbians' ignorance, that's my word, about financial matters.
Yeah, I know. We already argued about this.
Yeah, and you were, again, anytime, Adam, that something is presented to you, mm-hmm. This is the only critical thing I can say about, not the only, but it's one of about two critical mm-hmm. things that I can say about you. Anytime something is presented, even if it's blatantly factual, but if it's not fitting your current narrative, you are extremely dismissive of it. Now, you're giving me time to make my case today.
Yep.
I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to let it go at that and say, have a great day. Love your show.
All right. And I totally disagree with almost everything you said today.
Well, you've got to pander and cover your butt. I don't.
I'm being serious here. Yeah. Like, in terms of what happened, actually, you know, I wasn't even going to talk much about Roe v. Wade, but when we talk about the foundational precedent that has just been overturned in the United States of America, and it's actually to do with privacy, it's about implicit rights that aren't written down in the Constitution, but were found by the U.S. Supreme Court to be implicitly protected by the Constitution anyway, the right to privacy has been extended to so many other issues. Now that it has essentially been overturned in this matter, it calls into question the integrity, or at least how long these other cases could last if a new case was to come before the nation's high court and be retried. And I don't actually know what the answer to that is, and I'm sure you could have the smartest lawyers around argue with each other all day without actually getting any closer to the truth until it actually comes before the court. No, Roe v. Wade being overturned was absolutely positively massive in terms of a potential erosion in rights, and for sure erosion when it comes to the right to abortion, but not only that right. It was huge. We still don't know how, well, we still don't know how far the shockwaves will go. Anyway, quick break. Back after this.
Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
No one cares what Richard's views on abortion are. From a woman, writes a texter at 107010. Another texter says, I gather you're a smart guy, Adam. I know you know this decision doesn't mean abortion is illegal everywhere. It just means it might be illegal in conservative states. If you want to have a late-term abortion, then move to California, texter writes. And they say, and they'll hand you a crack pipe on your way in. Okay, there's a lot to unpack there, texter. In terms of what is actually happening, I don't believe for a second that this is not actually about abortion. And I think that everybody should be open and honest enough. Like there are some people in the U.S. who are cheering this ruling. Do you think they're really cheering this ruling because bad law in terms of a decision and privacy rights being extended to this in a case that, or in a situation where it should have never happened, because for the 14th Amendment to function, they need to be rooted in tradition in the United States. And obviously tradition in the United States can't exist for something that science didn't actually give people the ability to safely do. No, I refuse to believe that this is actually about just legal clarification. I also don't believe it's about states' rights either. I think that's just a convenient argument point for those who believe that abortion should be banned. If you believe that, I think that people should say that. And if you want to have that argument, have that argument. I don't buy the whole states' rights thing. I know it's a convenient, technically correct argument that you could make, but I don't really believe that's what's having people cheer about this. I don't really believe that's what's animating people about this. And I don't believe for a second that it was why the new Supreme Court justices were grilled as intensely as they were about their views of Roe v. Wade during their confirmation hearing process. I just don't believe it. I'm sorry. Somebody texts me, it's about the sanctity of life. It's about, I don't really want to get into this, but what I have said in the past about this issue, I will reiterate now. One of the reasons that it is so difficult to find complete uniform consensus on the issue of abortion is because it confronts us with one of the oldest and most complicated questions that human beings have ever asked themselves, to which there is no clear answer. You know what that question is? What are we? At our core, are we an assembly of trillions of single cells, each of which is essentially a mechanized protein robot, nothing magical or special about it, bound only to the laws of physics? Where does a human life actually begin? What distinguishes a human life from slime mold and pond scum if both of us just are single-celled organisms with remarkably similar cellular machinery? Is there such thing as a divine spark? Is there such thing as a soul? If so, where does a developing human being develop that? Like, these are the sorts of questions that, in order to be comfortable with one's position, you need an answer one way or the other in terms of what you think. And that's why there's so much consternation in many cases, I think, about this debate just not going away, despite Morgenthaler settling the issue legally in this country back in the 80s and Roe v. Wade settling the issue even earlier than that in the United States, which of course has now been overturned. If you believe what you believe about the nature of human life and about what we actually are, it's very unlikely that me, the guy on the radio, is going to change your mind, regardless of what side of this you are on. I have always said that I'm on the pro-choice side because the uncertainty about where human life is and is not in terms of a new human being is outweighed by our complete confidence that the woman in that equation is very much alive, very much sentient, very much a living person, and able to make what I would imagine is a very difficult choice for herself, The issue has never been should abortion be totally banned. The issue has been who should make the choice. I don't want to make the choice. I don't know enough. I let the individual make the choice. Is an embryo alive? Is it not alive? I don't know. I'm some guy on the radio. And you know what? You can believe what you want to believe, and it's very unlikely anybody will be able to prove you right or wrong, which means the argument and the fight never ends. And I just don't think it's helpful. I think that we moved on from this in Canada a long time ago. I had thought that America had moved on from this a long time ago there. Apparently they haven't. So I'm expecting there to be bitter, contentious political debate there on this because it's now no longer a protected legal right, which means every time you flip a state in terms of that state's legislature, it might flip back and forth. And you can look forward to policy lurch from now until whenever. I don't think it's helpful at all. That's my view on the overall issue. So there we are. All right, Kevin, how you doing?
Good. Well, I'm going to say I completely agree with you on the side. You know, this is just stripping people of their human rights. So, but we're not going to touch on that. Canada Day is a personal thing to everybody. We all celebrate it in a different way. You can't dispute that. You know, whether you're a new person to the country, you've been here for generations, whatever. I've never been one for celebrating many things, New Year's, whatever, you know, not even my birthday, really. It's just another day, you know. It's a number. I'm this age, I'm that age, whatever. I think we just spent too much time, too much energy, and too much money to celebrate what is essentially a mass renoviction. We came to this country, there were people here, and we basically said, we're taking over. We're going to change everything. We're going to take your children. Are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, sorry.
No, I'm listening.
We're going to take your children, take your culture, take your lands, and now it's ours. That's essentially what we're celebrating. And the fact that we're inviting them to help us celebrate that, I wouldn't even involve myself with that if I was a First Nations. But again, things change. We are a country, and I said, it means something different to everybody, whether you be a new immigrant to the country or you've been here for generations. It all means something different to all of us. To me, it's just another day. I will be at work. And yeah, but if you want to celebrate, yeah, no, celebrate. I just think we put too much time, effort, and energy, and people should celebrate it in the way they want, personally, at their homes, with their friends, with groups, whatever. We don't need to put on big displays of fireworks where that money could be used, you know, much better areas. But that's just my opinion, and that's all I've ever expressed on this radio. You don't have to agree with it. You don't have to like it. It's just an opinion. So,
Kevin, thanks for the opinion.
I hope everybody has a good Canada Day.
All right. You too. Take care. Have a good day. 250-386-1161, *1070. A free call on your wireless device. Richard's texting back and telling Kevin to shut up. Richard, you had your turn. Kevin gets his turn. We can agree. We can disagree. And again, I really don't want to get pulled into the abortion debate. You know, you have the position that you have. It's very unlikely that I'm going to be able to change it. And it's also very unlikely that you're going to be able to change anybody else's position. This has been a settled issue here in Canada since 87? Morgenthaler was decided. I know that there was the appeals as well. And it was largely settled in the United States until just recently. There is one thing, though, that I think is absolute true fact that is going to be stated now that abortion is not going to be accessible to potentially millions of women in these affected states that have decided to enact bans of various degree. People are going to die, innocent people. Now, I know those of you who are opposed abortion, you believe that people were dying anyway in terms of those new lives. So I understand the moral dilemma for you. Again, that uncertainty that I mentioned earlier has always been part of the way I think about this. We will see women who we know are alive, who we know are sentient, die because of this. 100%. That is going to happen. So it's hard for me to see anybody cheering and wonder, do they realize what's actually going to flow from this? You can say, well, you shouldn't do that if you don't want the consequences. Well, okay, that's what about people who didn't know that Roe v. Wade was going to be overturned today? What about people last week? What about people a month ago? Well, you should have voted differently. If you wanted a states' right issue, it needs to be a political issue. It'll be decided by the legislature. All right, when the last time Americans voted for who their government was going to be states-wise, did they know that Roe v. Wade was suddenly going to become a political issue? Did they have that information when they made that choice? Or are they stuck midterm right now? I know November's coming up. For the next 6 months, not knowing that if their Republican governments would have eroded these protections with Roe v. Wade overturned, would they have still made that choice? It's not that simple. It's, in fact, for many people, it's probably going to be a disaster. So that's my view on it. You don't have to share it, but that's how I see it. Anyway, quick break. We're back right after this.
This is Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Richard just texted me and says, Adam, please provide some context and let people know why I wanted Kevin to shut up. This just never ends. Richard texted, tell sanctimonious Kevin if he is going to walk the talk and not just talk the talk, to take the title to his land and house down to the local First Nations office and hand them the title to his land. Otherwise, Richard writes, stop virtue signaling and shut up. Richard, I just think you like being offensive. I think that you find issues that you know that people care about, and I think that you enjoy being blunt and unapologetic in telling them that they are wrong to care about something. That's what I think. That's just my theory. Texture 107010 writes, let's see, where did I see this here? Adam, you are clearly more left-wing than I thought. I don't know. What did you think I was? Texter writes, I didn't disagree much with what Richard had to say. The U.S. Supreme Court's only job is to interpret a law towards the U.S. Constitution. That's it. Yeah, but we both know that's not the issue here, Texter. We both know that that's just playing games. Oh, it says this. Yeah, but that's not why everybody cares about this so much, is it? Texter writes, activist judges like Ginsburg made up stuff because they didn't like what a particular law says, what they think it should say versus what it actually says. Well, interpreting the text of a law is why we have courts, Texter. That's why we don't just have a government and the cops, and you can point at what the law says, and every person gets to interpret that in their own way in a different situation. The reason that we have courts is that we have a specific interpretation that a court makes as to what the words on that paper mean, and that specific interpretation ideally should be held by all courts everywhere so that we have that uniformity in our body of law, which is important in terms of something being a society of laws. Those interpretations can change, but they're supposed to change for everyone, not just, you know, oh, I hope I get the nice cop today and I don't end up going to jail for too long. I know that judges will still have latitude to make individual choices, but even judges are supposed to be bound by stare decisis, which is just Latin for means stand by that which has already been decided, and make findings within that range of prescribed and possible outcomes. The idea is the legal system is essentially supposed to be, it's almost like an artificial intelligence, one of the first, I would argue. The idea that there would be just this system that is more fair and just than any one person or group of people ever could be with all these checks and balances in place. The idea is it's the court making these findings, not just the judge or justice, whoever happens to be on the bench in that particular instance. They're all bound by each other and they're all supposed to act collectively, if that makes sense. So it's not up for you and I to interpret what is and is not there. We can agree or disagree, of course, but it's up for the court collectively to make those interpretations, again, within reason. And the court has now decided that that initial interpretation is no longer valid, which is how we got into this in the first place. Let's go to Joan. Hey, Joan, you're on the air. How you doing?
I'm fine today, Adam. You know, you wear me out.
I wear out everybody. That's kind of what I do.
Well, you know what? I would like you just for once to maybe tune in and listen to.
Do you call into those shows and tell them to listen to me? Like, I wouldn't mind that. That'd be nice. Free commercials.
You know what?
What?
You know, would you please let somebody finish?
Okay.
If you would listen to what Mark Levin posted last night or said last night on his show.
Well, what do you think? I care about what you think.
No, I want to give you a chance to not argue with me. Let me finish a sentence. And I would like you to please listen to somebody that is an expert in the field of Constitution and of the Constitution in the United States, not what you think it should be. He had the most excellent program last night. It's on at...
But we knew exactly what he was going to say about this before it even happened, because it's about uniformity. There are two sides. We know that. There's liberal commentators and conservative commentators in the U.S. Everybody knows that. And there's not going to be much divergence. Now, it doesn't mean it's bad, but that's how the system works.
Adam, there you go again. We knew exactly what he was going to say.
Yeah.
So you know what a constitutional expert is going to say.
He's
going to
say that what the newly appointed justices did with Roe v. Wade was sound and correct. Am I wrong?
He gave the reasons for that, which you're not.
Probably because anyway, the right to privacy in terms of abortion was not grounded in tradition, which is one of the conditions that is set in the 14th Amendment, which was ratified in 1868. Like, I do understand how it works legally. What I am suggesting to you is that the moral issue and the legal issue get debated when they are convenient, and they get ignored when they're convenient.
You know, you amaze me because you've gone from being a medical expert now to a law expert.
Anyway, well, I'm not wrong.
Have a nice weekend.
All right. Have a good day, Joan. Bye now. By their logic, slavery should still be legal. Well, that's the problem with originalist interpretations of the Constitution. Are we to believe that in 1776, or I can't remember, actually, I know that was when the Declaration of Independence happened, but in terms of the Constitution was developed following that, are we to believe that this document is perfect, you know, like 1,000 years from now, they're going to use the same original text, are we to believe that the United States itself has a best before date, or are we to believe that it should be able to last in perpetuity? How can originalist doctrine evolve to a changing world, or is the expectation that it will not evolve? Is the expectation that it was created perfect and will be able to stay that way from now until whenever? Or maybe you don't believe it needs to last very long because you think the world's going to end soon. That's also an unspoken element in terms of the debate in the United States of America that doesn't get said out loud very often in terms of the need for the Constitution to evolve. Because if you believe the United States of America, much like other nations, might last for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years still to come in the future, surely you can see the need that its foundational document might need to evolve and change with the times. But if you don't think there is much time left, then you wouldn't really see that need, would you? Anyway, 1791. Texter writes to me. Sounds about right. Texter writes, the Supreme Court of the United States of America decision is irrelevant here. Time to move on. You know what? I think you're absolutely right. But again, this brings up a point that I wrote on social media over the weekend, and I disagree with and I've seen a lot of commentators, sometimes they're ones I agree with, sometimes not. I've seen a lot of commentators say, you know what, Adam, this ruling has nothing to do with Canada. We shouldn't talk about it. We shouldn't even acknowledge it. It is a different set of laws. It means nothing here. You know what? I disagree with you. I contend that while it does not have legal significance here, it has enormous political significance. Why is that? Well, because abortion is essentially now a state-by-state political issue that we assume will be decided by state legislatures, which means it could be overturned. State flips red. Whoops, there goes the abortion rights. State stays blue or flips blue. Okay, we've got more rights now. If that's going to be the way that this is decided now, it means that this issue will be a massively and contentiously debated one right before every single state election. Because of the internet, all of us are inundated with American political discourse now, I would argue to a much greater degree than we ever were. We cannot help but be influenced by the debate that we will hear, a debate that has no reasonable expectation of ending at this point, unless the Supreme Court or some higher authority codifies it into law once again. I suppose you could still opine that it should not have done that. But because it is now a political football, because the courts have said this is a state issue, states' rights, state legislatures will make the decision on this, it means the debate's going to happen. And the debates in the United States influence us. Even though this is a settled issue here in Canada and has been a legally settled issue for 30 years now, more than 30 years, in fact, we will start to see, I think, this debate playing a larger role in Canadian politics. And that means people are going to start talking about it more here, which means that one of the oldest and largest fault lines in Canada's political or conservative movement, the issue of abortion, cannot help but have strain put upon it. There are a certain number of conservative MPs who, if they had their way, would absolutely introduce more restrictions to abortion. You just ask them and they'll tell you, we don't have any law right now. We don't. That's the argument. There are others who recognize that if they want to have that debate, they risk losing a whole pile of moderates who, quite frankly, like a lot of things that the conservatives do, really don't like the other options. But for them, that would be a deal breaker if it were to ever happen. The Liberals figured this out a long time ago, which is why they have debated the issue so forcefully, I suspect, because they know that it's a wedge that drives conservative caucus and rips it right down the middle. Those forces pulling different elements of conservative caucus in different directions right now will be on our political landscape. And the Liberals won't need to do it. Nobody will need to do it. It'll be the Americans that do it by making this a live political issue. That is the most significant impact for you and I, Canadians, with the Roe v. Wade decision being overturned over the weekend. The political debate that must now happen again, because it's going to be a states' rights issue, a political issue, will influence us here. And divisions that have basically been, for the most part, smoothed over in different political camps here in Canada will suddenly be inflamed. They'll have tension put on them, and who knows? They might even rupture like a political fault line. Texter at 107010 writes, Adam, they're called amendments for a reason. OMG, these trolls plan all weekend and can't wait to call you on a Monday morning. Maybe. Texter writes, hi, Adam. The U.S. Constitution is not perfect and has an amending process. It's been used 27 times since its inception. Roe v. Wade had 50 years for Congress. I know, Texter, but they thought that they were using the 14th Amendment, is what I'm suggesting to you. I'm suggesting to you that in some American states today, there are women who are not able to access this medical procedure who may have voted differently in the last election if they had known that the court was going to pull the rug out from under them before they went to the ballot box. And they may choose to change their vote in some of these states that hold elections this November because of this change. This, for many women, will be a deal breaker. Women who would otherwise vote Republican, otherwise vote conservative, particularly younger ones, I suspect will change their votes over just this issue. But they've got to get to November 1st. And to have the rug pulled out midterm like this, it's a disaster. It really, really is. And I don't think we fully realize just how many people will be plunged into a situation that is untenable, that is desperate, and that really has no way out for them. I have no idea how they're going to adapt. And that's pretty much the best spin, if you will, that I can put on this. So there we go. Roe v. Wade, 50 years, Texter writes, for Congress to pass a law to enshrine that procedure in the U.S. legal system. The Roe decision was never a constitutional right because it was a judicial ruling. Well, the ruling was about implicit rights, Texter, and the court's recognition of implicit rights within the U.S. Constitution. So you could argue that it was technically a right. Yes, an implicit one, but you know what I'm saying. A court cannot create a constitutional right in the U.S., thanks, Christian. It can recognize one, though. And again, that's the idea. If we take a document that was written before women could vote, when black people were not people, they were slaves, they were property. If we take an originalist point of view from that document, in a world where we know social progress does happen, eventually those two schools of thought will come into irreconcilable conflict with one another. The way that the Americans got around that was using the 14th Amendment to recognize implicit rights within the Constitution, including but not limited to the right to privacy, which in a complicated way is how Roe v. Wade was decided. It was personal privacy in terms of the state. And then that was extended and interpreted to implicitly include the right to abortion. And you might say, well, that's a really weird way of doing it, Adam. Is that how it was? Yeah, that's how it was decided. And that's why some have argued against the way that it was done. Although I contend the larger issue is and always was the abortion issue itself. It was just more convenient for many to argue it from the legal point of view. Just my thoughts. Anyway, quick break. We're back after this.